I am all in.
With Scott Patterson, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Hey, everybody. This is Scott Patterson. I am All In podcast, iHeartRadio. And we are going to talk about Kiss and Tell, Episode 7, Season 1. And we have a very, 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 very special guest and a good personal friend of mine, Mr. George Bell. George Bell was the dialogue coach on Gilmore Girls, what season 3 through 7 through the end of the run. You came in the first part of season 3. My God, he saved the show. George literally saved the show.
Oh, come on.
We were kind of struggling along with all the dialogue. Until you showed up. And then when you showed up, it just, you know, the days became shorter, the scenes became better. It all got easier when you were there because you were helping us out so much. So let me tell everybody who the heck you are. And you've got quite an impressive resume, young man. So let me put on the specs here. So you played dual roles in Gilmore Girls. It was first as dialogue coach, and you also appeared as Professor Bell.
That's right.
Fantastic. And you were in 7 episodes from 2003 to 2007. First time we saw you was season 4, episode 6 in Affair to Remember. And the last time we saw you as Professor Bell was season 7, episode 20, Lorelei, ? Anyway, George, what is a dialogue coach? What is it? What do you do? What is it specifically that you do?
Well, dialogue coach, not to be confused with dialect coach. Dialogue coach is the keeper of the word, so to speak. And that when the executive producer, they want the dialogue pretty much word for word, then I'm there to work with the actors to make sure they get it word for word. Dialect coaches are people like, if you talk with a British accent, a Jamaican accent, so it's an accent for dialect. But for me, it's dialogue. I don't give acting notes unless the actor would request it from me. I'm just there to be, you know, the person to read the lines with them and drill it in their head. And then after each take, I'll go up to them with my little trusty notebook to show them if they got something wrong. And generally with my my own method is I try to write what the actor said incorrectly, because quite often as an actor, you think you're saying the line correctly, but then you're really not. So one of the first things, you show them something they did wrong, they said, well, what did I say? So if you can show them what they said incorrectly, then more often than not, they can make the adjustment. Some actors, I don't tell them what they said incorrectly because it only would confuse them more. But other actors would like to know to make that adjustment. So I know how each actor worked on the show, what their method was, and I would work with them under that framework.
Oh yeah, really interesting. So you would approach me differently than you'd approach Lauren, than you'd approach Yannick. So what were the differences? What was I like to work with on set, and how did you approach me?
You really love to run the lines over and over and get it drilled in your head,
right?
Which was great, and also, you know, because I would come to your trailer, mm-hmm. which was nice, and quite often you would treat me with sushi. I'd like that.
I always shared, George. I always shared.
Yeah, right. So, we would work the scene and work the scene. You know, sometimes it took 10 times, 15 times, whatever it took mm-hmm. for you to feel comfortable, and then you were there. Lauren, she liked to just do it maybe a couple of times and really at rapid speed. And also maybe just the cue line sometimes, like maybe a line or two just to give it a cue. Mm-hmm. And so we would do that. Alexis was the kind of the same. We would just do it quickly. And also Lauren and Alexis, what they would do, they would write down their dialogue on the back of their sides, because they said that that would help them memorize the line by writing down their lines, which I actually incorporate that as an actor now. And it's true. It sometimes helps you when you write it down. It kind of somehow settles in the brain. Kelly, because she's from theater, she'd like to run the lines. So most people were like you, they like to run the lines. But I think you were the most diligent in wanting to run the lines and really get it locked in so that you were ready.
Yeah, for me, it was about the comedic timing. It's if you don't have the lines cold, you can't really focus on the timing. And
right.
the last thing I wanted to do was screw up Lauren on a timing things, because she had so many of those great lines, and I didn't want to get in the way of that. And you can really, kill a scene if your timing isn't there. You know, if you don't know your lines, and that's the first thing. I mean, that's the first rule of theater. You come in walking. I mean, sorry, you walk in talking. You have to come in walking. Maybe sometimes you walk in crawling, or I have no idea. But you've got to know your lines.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what about on the set? What was the experience like? Were different actors that you approached on set to correct their dialogue? Were they, it can get a little testy sometimes, because people they're very tired. They've been there for 16 hours and they do a brilliant monologue or a brilliant scene, and one word is off. And you have to go up and deliver the bad news and say, listen,
I was the sacrificial lamb.
Yeah, I know. You had a tough job, man. And you had to go up and you had to tell the director, look, we got to do it again, because they didn't get that one word right. And then you have to go up to whoever it was, me or whoever, and say, listen, you got that word wrong. And you're just like, oh, no, we can't use that take. So what was that experience like for you?
Well, that's also in part the reason why I would write down what the actor said if I could, because sometimes if it was so tiny, I could lobby on their behalf. Say, look, they just said this instead of that. It's close enough. And especially it was helpful if Amy and Dan were directing, because they were the final say. So with them, they would give you guys a little bit more leeway actually than some of the other guest directors. But I think for all of the regulars on the show, they kind of knew the routine. Even though I was coming up there to give them the correction, for the most part, everyone took it in stride and they understood. It was sometimes the guest actors that would kind of crash and burn and, would want to crucify me because, they're like, what the hell, So I was like, sorry, don't shoot the messenger.
Right. You remember that guy, that nice guy? He was a little bit older, and he was an experienced Broadway theater actor, and he just got this deer in the headlights thing going on about. And he looked at me and he goes, "Do we really have to go this fast?" I said, "Yeah, we do. Unfortunately." He was like, "I don't know if I can do this." I said, "You can do this. If I can do this, you can do this." You're right. They would the guest actors would get shocked. They wouldn't realize what they were walking into, the speed of it.
Not at all. I think how I got Professor Bell is that many of the people who were playing the teachers crashed and burned. And there was one time. This lady who was a teacher, Jamie Babbitt, was directing that episode, I remember. And so, and I was in the hallway with her running the lines and everything like that. And, and she kind of had it, but I kind of see that look coming over them like, uh-oh, danger, Bill Robinson, dungeon. And she just quietly said, "I want to go home." And I said, "What? I can't do this. I want to go home." I said, "No, you're good. No, no, I need to go home now. Oh, no. And so I said, oh, no, no, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. And so we ended up having to write cue cards in the back of the classroom so she could read the lines, because she just had so psyched herself out and couldn't take the stress of it all that we had to write it on cue cards. And that was the only way she got through it. And then I don't know if it was the actor that you were talking about. It was in the little movie theater. There was a couple, an older guy, and he just, I had to literally, especially for his coverage, just feed him every line. Mm-hmm. I would say the line, and then he would say the line. Then I would say the next line, and then he would say the next. That was the only way he was going to get through it. He had just, that was it, you know? And so, we had those moments.
Oh, George, it was... You know, you forget. It's been so long, and you forget what a pressure cooker the series was. I mean, the reboot was a lot more relaxed.
We had more time
to prep the scenes and all that kind of stuff. But
and they weren't as strict about the dialogue,
right?
Because it was just Dan and Amy directing,
right?
So they were okay. So that's why I tried to write it down so they could see. And it was like. And rarely did we have to go back and do it because of the dialogue. It was, unless it was just really, you know, like a whole line was omitted or something, or, you know, and so, and I wrote down what was said on what take. So on take three, they missed this word or that sentence. On take four, that was a better one, but they missed this, but they got that one right on take. So they knew which one. So she said, so we have it. I said, well, on take, maybe 2 and 6, you have it,
mm-hmm.
you know.
So it's really interesting. So I want to take us back a little bit. How did you get the job as a dialogue coach on the show?
Carla McCloskey, who is a very, very dear friend. I sang in their wedding. Her husband and I went to college together. We were theater majors.
Oh, okay. So let's tell the audience who Carla is. What was her role over there?
Carla was the first AD, assistant director, mm-hmm. on the series, and she's like the main person. They're like the heartbeat of the show, and so I guess when the decision was made in the third season to bring in a dialogue coach, in part it was because they were going through script supervisors. Like it was like a revolving door, you know. I think they realized, well, you know what, maybe it's too much to expect the script supervisor to do all what they do and then to be on top of the dialogue. So they said, let's bring in a dialogue coach. And Carla said, I have just the person. Mm-hmm. And so, but I interviewed with several other people, and I think they got it down to 4 people. And then the 4 of us interviewed with Lauren.
Really?
And so we interviewed with Lauren. And in the interview with Lauren, she said, now you're friends with Carla, right? I said, yeah. And I said, we're close friends. So I think that was my ace in the hole. And so, and I was selected. So that's how, I first interviewed with Patricia Palmer and Amy.
So Patricia Palmer was
the producer,
one of the supervising producers or one of the main producers of the show.
Right. Yeah. Right. So my first interview was with them. And then I think they whittled it down to 4 of us who met with Lauren, and then Lauren had the final say as to who she wanted. And so she selected me.
Good decision.
And so that's how I got brought on board.
Good decision.
I remember my first day, you said, I can't believe they did it. They actually they sprung some money and brought in a dialogue code. I can't believe it. You were like, you were really happy, you know, but you couldn't believe it. You know?
Yeah, I don't know. I think around season 3, they were starting to cut the budget on craft service. So the craft service wasn't as, you know, I mean, it was nice. It was always nice, right? But craft service is where, you know, all the food is, the snacks and the fruits and the veggies and
right.
The water and the soda and all that stuff. But it was, There was always sort of a budgetary constraints to consider, and that's perfectly understandable. Those shows are very, very expensive to produce. So, I mean, if you're doing multiple shows over there, you know, you're gonna try to keep it in line accounting wise, but perfectly understandable. But anyway, that's so interesting. So, and then tell us about when they were gonna let you go.
Well, I think I quit four times.
Really?
I think it was about four times.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Because it was
too
much?
I do remember one time you were just, when you heard that, in fact, who was it? Was it Dan Church, the sound guy or someone? Usually when you, if you were out for a few days, you know, and then you'd come up to the sound truck or something, and I think you said, okay, so who got fired today? Or you know, who got fired this time? And they said, well, George quit. And he said, and you said, what? Oh, no, this can't happen. And you went to Patricia, you can't, no, this cannot happen. Right. You can't, this can, right. No, we cannot lose him. We cannot lose him. Right. You know, we're not going to let that, so... And it didn't happen.
You were the glue. I mean, there's no way we could have done that kind of work at that level without you. There's just no way it could happen. I mean, it's not like we weren't going in each other's trailers running lines. Everybody was too busy. I mean,
yeah, everyone was busy doing their own other thing. And so I was rushing around, you know, and I worked with everybody. If you had one line as a guest actor, if I had the time, I would go there and just, you know, give you that attention, just to make sure, because quite often, especially for the guest actors, the first AD relied on me to see if they were, how they were doing. And I remember this one guy who was a minister and was in the dinner scene at the Gilmore House. And when I ran lines with him, they weren't sticking. And so as I'm running the lines, where he's not looking at me, and Sean Kavanaugh, who was the other first AD, was looking at me, you know, to see how things were going. And I did this. And he was like, oh. So then everyone kind of knew what was going on, mm-hmm. you know, so that, no, it's not, you know, I would go to the director and say, no, you know. And I mean, I was the liaison between the actor and the video village, where the director and all the technical people would be. And especially for the guest actors, because I knew all you guys' personality. I knew if you were having a tough day or things were kind of, you know, you were struggling a little bit, or, you know, this, you know, are you, there was no more correction should be given, you know? And I would literally, a couple of times with the directors, I'd say, no, I wouldn't give them that note.
Stay away from
not a good time. You need to let them have another go at it. Because they would say, aren't you going to go in? I go, no, that they're on the edge, you know, let them figure it out, you know. Right. And so, you know, unless it was something I absolutely had to go in, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, as I was there longer and I felt more secure, you know, I felt I could make that call sometimes just to say no. And I would, you know, warn the directors, especially the new ones, they're not having you right now. So, yeah, let them alone.
I don't know who it was, but, and they were all delightful and they were all such good directors, but some of them, not a lot of them, but some of them would come in onto the set. They'd leave Video Village. They'd take their ears off. They come into Video Village after every single take and talk your ear off. And you'd just be like, really, this is happening again? Like, it's the second take, you know?
Yeah.
We'll get there. We'll, you know, and it was just, and then they'd go to each actor and it would take forever to do it. So, so you were back there with a leash on them. That's interesting.
I was trying to say, again, most of the time the directors would listen to me, you know, and take my lead. But sometimes they didn't, and they found out that I was right.
So they defied you. They didn't take your advice, and then they got chewed out a little bit. They came back with their tail between their legs.
Yeah. That happened. But also script supervisors. Oh my God, there were a couple of script supervisors who were just the very first script supervisor that when I first started, she started 4 days before me. And instead of her being happy that I was there to kind of relieve the pressure, she was very territorial and she was jealous because, you know, the actress had taken to me so quickly. And she gave me all kinds of problems, you know, and was just like, I'm just trying to help you out. You know, she one time she didn't even want me on the set, you know, and wow. But eventually she was let go. And you know, there was, like I said, a revolving door of script supervisors. And I probably into the sixth or seventh season, I can't remember, there was this one young girl who had come on and she was like trying to give me all kind of grief. And I just pulled her aside. I said, excuse me, but there's a reason why I'm still here. And I said, you know, there have been a lot of script supervisors. So I would think that you would want to listen to what I have to say, because, you know, there's a reason why I have survived.
That's right.
And so
not an easy place to survive.
Right. No. And sure enough, I don't know, maybe she lasted two shows, maybe three episodes. I don't know. And then she was gone.
George,
you know,
wow, so, what a place!
Yeah, it was something.
It was like the octagon in there, wasn't it? It was like a Chuck Norris film. Good God! Let me ask you this. I wrote down this question. What was the script? Which script was the toughest one that you had the opportunity to coach on? Do you remember? If there was one particular script that, because they were all pretty dense with dialogue. So was there one particular that you remember? And if not, it's okay. We won't be.
I don't remember a script per se. I think what I would do, I would judge if it was going to be a tough day, depending upon the actor who was in and the amount of dialogue they had to do. So certain actors who shall remain nameless weren't very good with dialogue, handling dialogue in some of the other roles. And if they had a particularly big scene with a lot of dialogue, I knew my work was going to be kind of difficult that day because they just weren't quick with the lines. No, it didn't mean they weren't a good actor.
Right.
It's just that certain people could retain lines pretty well and certain people couldn't. So if I saw on a particular day that a certain actor was in and I look and I see all the pages and they had a lot of dialogue, I'm like, okay, we're going to have a long day today, you know? And so, you know, and then with certain actors, you know, if I saw that they had a lot of dialogue and they'd be like, okay, you know, I know that they were going to breeze right through it. So, so not so much the script, it was just the actor, and how well they, you know, could learn their lines and how, you know, how well they worked under pressure.
Right. So, all right, let's take a little break, George. Great talking to you. We're going to come back and recap the episode. This is Scott Patterson. I am All In. We'll be back after these messages.
First of all, you don't know me.
We're all about that high school drama girl, all about them high school queens. We'll take you for a ride in our comic girl,
drama girl,
cheering for the right team.
Drama queens, drama queens,
smart girl, rough girl, fashion, but you're tough girl. You could sit with us, girl.
Drama queens, drama queens, drama queens. Drama, drama queens, drama queens.
Hey, this is Bethany Joy Lenz.
And Sophia Bush.
And Hillary Burton.
And we have a podcast called
Drama Queens.
I feel like it's a walk down memory lane that also might be a little bit of a stumble down memory lane.
I mean, we'll have cocktails sometimes, so we might leave stumbling.
Mm-hmm. I'm good with that.
There are no fans like One Tree Hill fans. There is no family like our family. So we got together to do a rewatch podcast to relive the show, as so many of you have so many times, because to be honest, we haven't.
Yeah, we haven't seen it since 2002, 2003.
We can't wait to take this trip down memory lane with all of you.
What would our characters be doing right now?
I think Haley would probably be, she's got to be close to an empty nester now, right? Like, Jamie's out of the house.
Is she getting wild?
She might be finally ready to live out those wild years that she...
Cut loose, baby.
You know what I mean? I think it might be time.
I'm going to say a lot of therapy. Peyton Sawyer is in so much therapy right now.
Well, not long ago, I found my vote Brooke Davis for president pin. I don't know. Is Brooke Davis a senator or something?
Like 100%.
Yeah, you can totally go for that.
There's so much cool stuff to imagine for them. But before we can go forward, we got to go back to the beginning.
You nailed it.
Make sure you all listen to Drama Queens on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, thanks for listening.
Don't forget to leave us a review. You can also follow us on Instagram at DramaQueensOTH.
Or email us at DramaQueens@iHeartRadio.com.
See you next time.
We're all about that high school drama girl, drama girl, all about them high school queens. We'll take you for a ride in our comic girl,
drama girl,
cheering for the right team.
Drama queens, drama queens,
smart girl, rough girl, fashion but you're tough girl, you could sit with us girl.
Drama queens, drama queens, drama queens, drama, drama queens, drama queens.
All right, everybody, we're back. I'm Scott Patterson. I am All In Podcast, iHeartRadio. We're here with the dialogue coach from Gilmore Girls from season 3 to season 7 all the way to the end, George Bell, who also played Professor Bell, did 7 episodes in this series, a consummate actor in his own right. George, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Who was the best at reading their lines and who needed a little more help? Be honest.
Ha! Oh, God. Okay. if I were going to give medals out for best with lines,
yeah,
I would say Liza, Sean Gunn.
And we know that Liza played Paris and Sean Gunn played Kirk.
Well, Lauren, what amazed me about Lauren is that she kind of almost had like a photographic memory, so that she would come to work and, you know, without having even looked at the lines, but she could process it. And she must have a photographic memory or something, mm-hmm, because she was so quick with learning the lines.
That's what you get when you grow up reading books.
Yeah.
And when you live in books and you have that capacity. So it's a very special skill, you know.
Now, people who kind of struggled with lines doesn't mean that they weren't a good actor. I want to make that clear.
Mm-hmm. So wait a minute, you wouldn't put me in that category with the top people with the lines? I don't get in there.
No, you learn your lines, but they learned them quicker. Oh, okay. Is that what you read? So I mean, no, you knew your lines. I mean, I always felt good after I left your trailer. Right. I knew that, okay, he's rock solid. Just don't be in your eye line, that's all.
Don't get in my eye line.
Yeah, that was always fun, you know, because I would always clear it with you wherever I was on the set when you were doing the scene.
You would tiptoe.
I would be like, you would tiptoe. Scott, I bet. There you go. So I go someplace else and find another place for your eye line. So, you know, so it's like, okay, so it's a good place for your eye line. No, we had our routine that we always did. Now, for the actor that needed a little more work, and I think he would actually admit it, that he wasn't on top of his lines, it's Jackson. So Sookie's husband in the series. And, you know, and he directed a couple of episodes too. And, you know, good friends of Amy and Dan. But Yeah, even if he had a few lines, sometimes it just wouldn't stick. So I had to kind of, you know, work with him, you know, to make sure. I'm trying to think who else. Oh, bless her heart. Liz Torres, Miss Patty. Liz is one of those people that, you know, I don't tell her what she said wrong. Because she would say, no, I don't want to know, you know, because I get confused, you know, don't tell me. So I would just give her the correction. She was a hoot. Let me see. Oh, Sally Struthers was pretty good with lines.
Yeah.
And with the two of them together, they were just such a joy on the set. They would crack up everybody. You know who actually was pretty good? Was Yannick, because French is his first language. So he really wanted to, you know, be on top of his dialogue. So, but if I were going to give a gold medal, and Kelly was really good too. So, everybody of the all the regulars, pretty much, it was, oh. Your sister.
Oh,
what's her name? Liz? Was that her name?
Yeah. Love her. Love her to death.
Wonderful actress.
Yeah, she's wonderful actress. She was great.
But a lot of actors come from the school of improv, where, you know, you know, as long as you get close to the lines, it's okay. And that was her thinking. And so for her to get to lock in to say the line exactly as written, that was a challenge for her.
Yeah.
But she was just a wonderful actress. But yeah, I remember her I'm having to really run lines with her quite a bit and giving her a lot of corrections because of that. So yeah, that was a challenge for her. But again, like I said, they were all great actors. And I just know that certain actors I'd have a little more work to do than others.
Kathleen Wilhoit.
Yes. Wonderful actress.
She
and a sweet girl. She was so sweet.
She was great. She was great. And she did a great job.
Yeah. She and Michael DeLuise. I love them. Yeah. They were great.
Those were really great days on set when those two were there. Absolutely. So what was it like as Professor Bell to be on the other side of the camera?
It was probably one of the most stressful days of my life.
Really?
Yes. Because how that all came about. It takes 8 days to do an episode. And usually the eighth day is the longest day, because if we had problems or we had to... we didn't get to all the scenes that day, then we put it on the back end, and we had to get everything done on that eighth day. And I remember this eighth day was on a Monday, so Monday's our earliest day, so we had gotten up really early that morning and to try to get everything done. I think it was getting around 6 or 7 o'clock that evening, it was already 12, 13-hour day. And then the next thing I know, they come up to me and say, George, guess what? You're going to be Professor Bell in the next episode. I went, oh, really? I said, oh, that's really nice of them. Oh, great. You know, I thought, okay. And I said, okay. And so then they gave me the script. I said, so now when am I doing this? You know, tomorrow. Tomorrow? Okay. And you're first up. I'm first up, and it's tomorrow, and we haven't finished with this episode. And then I looked, and it was a page and a half monologue. And I was like, when will I have time to learn this? You know, you're already brain dead anyway because you're tired. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to look at the lines and learn the lines between takes or when we're moving from one set to the next, you know. And I'm like, and then, of course, the added pressure is that, now the shoe is on the other foot. I've got to now, you know, it's like all the other actors, I'm sure, like, mm-hmm, okay, Now let's see you do it. Oh God. And so I went to the first AD and I said, is there any way you can put me toward the end of the day? Not first up. She said, no, because of the moving, it just makes the most sense. And I said, but I have no time to learn this. So anyway, I didn't sleep much that night at all. And in fact, I think around about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, my doorbell rings with changes to the dialogue. And I'm like, then I thought, am I being punked? I mean, is this for, you know? And so, and just enough to screw you up. And so when I walked in to do that scene, I was like a walking zombie. Now I must say, watching the scene, I must be a good actor because I was dying on the inside, but I looked calm on the outside, you know, and I got through it. You know, it wasn't my best work, but at least I got through it to, I guess, break the curse of the teacher or the professor, because then they gave it to me several more times. And the other times I had enough time to learn the lines and feel comfortable. But that very first time, I was in Rory's classroom. I think I was a philosophy or a sociology professor. And I don't have anyone else to the lines to bounce off of. It's just me talking. And talking, so it's all just all on me. The stress. That probably was my hardest day working on the show.
You were probably the most versatile actor of all of us because you had to play so many different roles when you were were coaching all of us, right? So you'd go from one to the other to the other. I mean, you probably do 5 or 6 every morning, and then you do more at lunch, and then throughout the day. So you were playing all the characters, and they, you know, Amy probably just said, boy, this guy can do anything. Let's see. He can do Professor Bell, and who cares if he can learn his lines. No big deal. He's a guy.
The reason why they were giving me all those little parts was partly, I think one of the times I quit, one of the things I wanted is, you know, your health insurance. So, and I wanted to get it as an actor. I had negotiated that they pay me as an actor.
Right.
And I needed to make a certain amount of money so I could get plan one, which was the better plan for health insurance. So, I remember one episode, I think the knitting one, I think I say one word, 20, I think is what I said, that counting down the seconds, and I say 20, and I got top of the show payment. Wow, they paid, wow. Because it was all going toward Amy did things for me that, you know, I wouldn't get on any other show.
For the audience, the top of show means when you get a guest star role, that they're paying you as the top guest star, which gives you what? $5,000 or whatever it is, or whatever it is now. Six now? You got six grand. So that's fantastic. And
for one word.
And you need to accumulate a certain amount of money earned in any fiscal year for the union to give you those lower rates on your health insurance. And if you don't accomplish that, then you lose your health insurance. It's very tricky, and it doesn't matter how good a year you had for 10 years in a row, you could be making millions of dollars. But if you don't continue hitting their minimums, you lose your health insurance. So that's a very, very big deal. Yeah, that's a nice thing. Good for you. Good, good, good.
Yeah.
So why don't we get into the episode recap? You watched Kiss and Tell last night?
I did.
And
I did.
What were your impressions? What did you think?
Everybody's so young. I said, oh my God, look how young everybody is, like little babies, you know. But it was great, you know, just to kind of go down that road. I mean, also because I didn't work on that episode,
right.
But, you know, I mean, I knew the set, and I, you know, of course I know all the actors. And so it was fun just seeing everybody and just how wonderful the show is. I mean, it's like comfort food. It's just a great show.
Yeah.
You know,
What did you think? You know, the thing that really jumped out at me about Kiss and Tell was Dean. It really developed a little bit Dean's background and where he came from and what he was all about. And, you know, when he, I was really surprised when he kissed her in Dozy's Market. I was very, very surprised, which really spawned one of the funniest lines, laugh out loud lines from Mrs. Kim, played so beautifully by Emily Carota, was to Lorelai when she came in. And that's when Lorelai found out about the kiss from, because Mrs. Kim thought she knew, says, your daughter's, you know, getting kissed. She's kissing or making out in Dozy's Market. And, you know, this is where we buy our food. hysterically funny. But I was a little surprised by that, you know, the Chicago kid coming into the little town and then, you know, grabbing the pretty girl and just planting one on her at work. And I just thought, boy, that's a bold move.
It was very bold.
Very confident bold. Young man.
Well, they had a lovely chemistry, the two of them. They really did. All three of her boyfriends, you know, Dean, Matt and Milo, those are my boys.
I didn't realize, you know, Jared was such a good actor at such a young age.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
he was 18 years old. He was literally just like out of high school, or maybe he was still in high school, but I think he graduated high school and then he's on the set of Gilmore Girls. Right.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, he was just like as fresh as it gets. And he was good at 18.
Oh, he was excellent. He was excellent. I think he got cast in that. Was it Jamie that was the casting director?
OK.
Mara, somebody.
Mara Casey and Jamie Radomski.
When we did one of the fan fests. She was telling how they found Jared because they had been looking and looking and looking. And I guess when he came in or something, because I don't know if he was leaving to go somewhere, but he read and she went running into Amy's office and said, oh, you got to come. You know, I think we found him. I think, you know, and Amy was like, and they went in and he read and sure enough. Mm. You know, that was Dean.
Great story. Great story. And I believe Dean recast when the original Dean was Nathan Wetherington. And Dean came in and took over that role from good old Nathan. But so what did you think? And also, you know, this episode, this kiss and tell, really... my God, I mean, Alexis was so vulnerable and sweet. And you know, it really defines what that town was all about and being raised in that town to produce a girl that was, you know, so vulnerable and so sweet and so, the flush of young love. And my God, he kissed me and she ran to Kim's Antiques and told Lane all about it and they giggled and it was like, wow. And it's like, it hit me, it hit me before, but it really hit me right between the eyes why people love this show so much and keep rewatching it is because this is so well done. I mean, to do those kinds of emotions in, a young person, a middle-aged person, an old person, to do that at that level is difficult. You don't see that. I mean, that's film quality. That's like high-end film quality, emotional life, writing, acting on a little screen from the WB. And it's confusing.
So well cast. I mean,
these young kids, man, they were so good. They were so natural good. They never pushed. They never, you know, you never caught them overacting or just great stuff. I thought he crossed the line a little bit with the scene. You know, she invited him over for movie night, which was another hysterical scene when Lauren told Alexis that she'd done that, invited Jared over. And you didn't see the look on Alexis's face, but you saw Lauren. They favored her coverage, what they consider a close-up, which is, you know, from sort of the navel on up. And Lauren just went, and why are you looking at me like that?
Right, exactly.
A horrified yeah. child, like, you did what? It was such a great scene. Such a great scene. And, but then, you know, after Lorelai gave Dean her little, like, if you hurt my kid, you're dead kind of speech.
Right.
Which, of course, has to happen. But it really surprised me that she took that much liberty, knowing that if Alexis ever found out, it was going to be, you know, trouble in River City. Like, you know, because Dean's going to say, boy, your mom really scared me a little bit. But, you know, he doesn't scare. He didn't
right.
scare.
No.
He was so in his own skin, that character, that he said, now, is it my turn? Can I speak now? And then he said, I need you to like me and this kind of thing. And I just thought, boy, that kid is ballsy.
Boy, he really I'm just like you. I was a little taken aback by that.
I was too. Whoa. I was yeah. too. But it says so much about the character, right?
Right.
It's like, it's not the writing. It's like, it takes you aback. It's what that character says. He draws a line and he says, listen, I'm an equal too. He's 18. He's 18 years old.
Right, and I'm here to, you know, I'm here to stay. You know, I'm in for the long haul. Wow. You know, so which was nice. I mean, and I love the fact that she did say that this town loves Rory and that everyone will be watching, because it's so true.
Everyone loves Rory,
and of course he's aware of it. That she is this special person that you do something wrong with her, you're gonna have a whole town to deal with.
Yeah,
you
know? That was an amazing scenes, really, really funny.
Was Sean in there was no Kirk in it yet, was he? So he wasn't,
and no Emily
series
or Richard either. It was devoid of Emily and Richard. So, you know, I wrote down some great lines when she was telling Lane about the kiss and where it happened, what aisle, and Lane says, oh, that's a great aisle. He says, well, why is that a great aisle? And she says, well, because that's where you got kissed. And then at the end of the show, she's telling her mother, she's telling Lorelai about it.
And she says, great aisle.
Yeah, that's a great aisle. Yeah.
Very clever.
But that's, you know, that scene, that episode for me really brought into focus as to why that show is so beloved. That was such a charming episode. Because everybody's been through that, man, woman, everybody's been through that first kiss. And it was just so iconic. The whole episode was so iconic and so funny. My God. I mean, I was laughing out loud through the whole thing.
Town knew about the kiss. Everybody knew about it.
You know, in comedy films, right? They say, every laugh, every big laugh is worth $20 million at the box office. There were five big laughs in the first 10 minutes of this thing, of this episode. and usually all of the episodes. I mean, you're getting 20, 25 big laughs throughout the whole thing in the hour. And it's, what, 40 minutes? Because they're doing 20 minutes of commercials.
Right,
unbelievable.
Exactly.
Just knockout stuff. Anyway, we're going to take another break. And we come back, George Bell and I are going to do something that we have never done on this podcast before, and we may never do again, depending on how this goes. We are going to walk the tightrope a la the Walenda family here with our fan base, the most dedicated fans in the world, the best fans in the world. And
yes, they are.
So we're going to take a little break. I am Scott Patterson. I am All In Podcast, iHeartRadio. We'll be right back after these messages. All right, we're back, everybody. I'm Scott Patterson. I am All In Podcast, iHeartRadio. We're here with George Bell, dialogue coach of Gilmore Girls season 3 through 7. We're going to do a little acting here. We're going to enact. We're going to reenact a scene from Kiss and Tell with Luke, Lorelai, and Alexis in this scene. This is a diner scene. I believe that it's a diner scene. Are you ready to critique us, George, and help us out?
I am ready.
Oh, good.
I got my laptop here and I'm looking. So it'll be a challenge for me because I don't have my pencil.
All right, here we go. Let's just take a crack at it. Danielle, Riley, are you ready? You ready, ready to rock and roll?
Sure. All right, let's go.
All right, ready? Anawana, Anatua, coffee? Oh, come on, man. Are you mad at me too? I mean, a man can choose whether or not he wants to a picture of a fat, stupid bird on his wall. And oh my God, that's the reason damn pilgrims came here in the first place.
Luke, I wasn't snubbing you. I didn't even hear you. Now I'm concerned about you.
Sorry, I'm just feeling a little persecuted lately. Coffee?
Please.
You okay?
Yes, I'm fine.
You don't look fine.
Well, thank you.
Well, I'm just might be a little concerned.
Preoccupied.
You look concerned.
Well, I'm not.
Well, it's fine. You just look it.
Hey, you know some streamers would look great in here.
Okay, I'm done.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Oh, hey, save your apologies for the Indians, Missy.
People are really in a giving mood today. The Horn of Plenty is packed.
That's great. Do you want some coffee?
Oh, no. I'll just have a sip of yours. I have to get right back.
Oh, really? I thought we were having lunch today.
I can't. We're one pilgrim short. I only have a couple minutes.
Oh, you've been really busy lately.
Yeah, I guess it's that end of year rush.
I mean, we haven't really even talked in a couple days.
What do you want to talk about?
I don't know, anything.
Okay, did you read the article in the newspaper about the polar ice caps melting?
Yeah, woo, big deal.
Fine, you pick the subject.
Okay, great. I was watching General Hospital the other day, and you know they have a new Lucky because the old Lucky went to go play something where he could have a real name. So the old Lucky had this girlfriend, Liz, who thought that he had died in a fire. So then they bring on this new Lucky, and you're all like, okay, I know that that's not the old Lucky because the new Lucky has way more hair gel issues. But still, Liz was so upset about the supposed death that you could not wait until you see them kiss, you know?
When do you have time to watch General Hospital?
Okay, let's get back to the point. What do you think about the whole Liz, Lucky kissing thing?
I think they're actors being played to play a part, so it's nice that they're living up to their obligations.
Rory.
Look, we can finish this meaningful conversation later. I promised Lane I would get right back.
Okay, I'll see you later.
Okay, bye.
I'm not going to say you look concerned.
I'm not going to talk about how good you would look dressed as one of the guys from The Crucible.
Fair enough. Wow.
Wow, that was awful.
Gaps,
oh my God.
Gaps you could drive trucks through. Right, George? So,
well,
go ahead.
The speed of the dialogue was good. I would say, okay. Normally, if people are too slow, I'll say, okay, that was great. Now, Gilmore-ize. You know, so it's like, they say, what? Speed it up, baby. Got to speed it up. Whoever was reading Rory, there was just one little tiny thing in that last page. Instead of, you said, look, we can finish this very meaningful, but it was, look, can we finish this very meaningful conversation later? So you kind of inverted that. And I have like a little symbol where I said you inverted that. There were just a couple of little flubs where you guys kind of repeated the word a second time. And I would probably put a little circle with a 2X by that saying, okay, you said that word twice. You know, it's just one time.
George has symbols. And, he's got symbols. He's got his own language.
Yeah, so I have all these symbols. You've seen my script. Yes. It's like chicken scratch all over the place. You know?
George, what about how terrible the acting was? It was really... Scott, you were great. You were great, Scott.
I wasn't.
But the others... It's like they forgot they were acting.
As I said before, as a dialogue coach, I don't give acting notes unless the actor specifically asks me something in regards to the acting.
Danielle Riley, why don't you ask George how good your acting wasn't?
Well, actually, what I was going to ask George is from a scale of 1 to 10 for a dialogue, what would you give us? 10 being great, 1 being really bad.
I would give you guys, because you see, you must remember you had the dialogue right in front of you. It's a whole different ball game when you're doing it from memory. So you don't have that safety net, but I'd give you an 8.
Nice.
Oh, you
nice
know what?
Score. Well done.
I can go to sleep happy tonight. I got an 8 from George. I'm good.
Well, part of being a dialogue coach is you have to be somewhat of a diplomat. You know, you got.
I give it a solid 2.
Thank you, Amy.
Solid 2.
It actually made me realize, like, wow, the show is so good because they are so bad.
Acting's hard. Acting's not easy. It's not easy.
It's not easy.
It's hard. Anybody that tells you acting's easy.
And then put in, like, especially for you, Scott, you're in your diner, you know, so you got a whole lot of props and things. Yep. You pour in the coffee, mm-hmm. you get in the donuts, you're getting the food orders, and then while saying all these lines at a rapid speed. So you got to get all those actions in as well as the dialogue. Right. And then you have to match it every take.
And you have to match it every single take, and you have to match it on the medium shots and the close ups.
Exactly.
Or you do it again and again and again.
And again, because yeah, then I'm there with my trusty. Well,
I'm scared of George's pencil for sure. No.
Oh, baby. I would put a lot of lead on my pencils.
You get a 10 out of 10. We love you. Oh, my God.
George was always a breath of fresh air. To come to the set and see George, everybody would smile. He'd put a smile on everybody's face. Georgie boy, how you doing, man? Huh?
I'm good. Yeah. You know, just hanging in there, just taking it one day at a time. So glad that the pandemic seems to be easing up now. Yeah. And so that we can maybe get back to some normalcy or some type of normalcy.
Have you been in touch with anybody from the cast?
Carla and Patty Malcolm.
Lauren Standen, Patty Malcolm.
Right. And who else do I...
Have you heard from Rich, my stand-in?
No, I haven't heard. I haven't seen or heard him in years. Yeah. I mean, you know, and of course with those fan fests, I'll see the people usually then. So I'll see Emily and Keiko and some of the regulars who've been doing it every year. So you know, and I'm Facebook friends with certain people, so I'll see their posts. Right.
I'm gonna see Sean at the end of July. We're doing a convention together in Connecticut at Mohegan Sun, July 29 through August 2nd. So Sean and I have done a couple of conventions.
Tom, I said, give him a big hug for me.
I will. He's great. We did a panel together, I think I can't remember. Somewhere in this, I think it was Charlotte, North Carolina, someplace. I see him. I see Milo on the convention circuit. We did a panel together in Houston at the Fandemic tour. So yeah, I get to see these guys on the road, Milo, in working situations, Milo. You know.
Oh, hey, you know, when we did the reboot, I remember Milo, one of my favorite stories about him is that we had been working that day, earlier that day, and then I think we were getting ready to read the next script, that was just going to be his first appearance in the reboot, and we do it on our lunch break. So I know I had been working all that day, and you know, and so then we go over to the place where we're going to read the script. Well, I had to go to the bathroom because it was like, okay, you know, because the scripts are really thick, and so I'm rushing to get to the bathroom, and Milo sees me, and it's the first time he's seen me in years. He was so excited, he followed me into the men's room, and he comes in the room. He said, "I'm sorry, George, don't think me weird, but I'm just so excited to see you. I just have to come and give you a hug." I said, "Oh, okay. Well, let's do it now before I do anything else." So he gives me a big old hug in the bathroom.
At least he didn't do it during, right? Yeah, there you go.
No. Yeah. I hadn't gotten to that point yet. It got to me before, so yeah. But yeah, all three of those guys, I mean, I just love them to death. Jared, Milo, and Matt Super. Yeah. They're all just, I'm just so happy for all of them that they're doing well
They're doing very, very well.
Yeah.
Georgie, how about time? It's time for rapid fire. You ready for rapid fire? Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to fire some questions at you rapidly.
Okay.
And I would like to ask for rapid answers, if you don't mind.
Rapid answers. Here we go.
Ready?
Okay.
How do you take your coffee?
Cream and sugar.
Can you smell snow?
No.
Are you team Logan, Jess, or Dean?
All three.
Who's the daddy?
have no clue.
Best memory of Gilmore Girls.
Oh God.
Sushi with Scott.
I can't. And everything. Just the actors, the being with all the actors.
Show you're binge watching right now.
Well, I just saw one episode of Loki on Disney Plus, but I think I may start back on Gilmore Girls after watching the episode yesterday. I was like, oh, it's been a while.
Cast member you texted most recently, and I think we know the answer to that one.
Patty.
Oh, I thought it was me.
Well, that text message. Oh, well, yeah, it would be you. Yeah.
You texted Patty after you just texted me before we went on the air, huh?
Oh, no. I text Patty just before to say that I was going to be doing the podcast. So then I got your text.
All right, buddy. All right. George, it was so great to see you and talk to you. And please come back. Please, please, please come back. Okay.
Oh, anytime. You know, you let me know. I'm there. And hey, I want to come and see the family.
Yes, Nick's 7 now.
What?
Yeah.
I'm getting old.
Anyway, Georgie, it was great seeing you. Thank you for your time. And just a fantastic catching up with you. And we'll do it again as soon as we can.
It was my pleasure. Okay. And thank you to all the fans for being so loyal to the show.
Aren't they great?
We really appreciate it.
Yeah. All right, George. Okay. Thank you so much. And we'll see you soon, buddy. Take care. Be well.
I will. Take care. You too.
Okay. Let me tell you something. He was like, every morning he was in my trailer. We were running lines, dishing the dirt, eating. You know, he was just a great guy to hang out with. He was just a really...
He remembers so much, too. That was why I loved talking to him, because he has all the great memories.
Oh, he's fantastic in every way. He upped the level of that show. He really did. Anyway, wasn't that fantastic? George Bell, one of my favorite people, not just from the set of Gilmore Girls, but in the world. What a great, great guy and a fantastic human being, fantastic dialogue coach, and a fantastic actor. He couldn't do the dialogue coaching at the level he does it without being a great actor himself. He understands it. And whenever I tried to run lines with other people to prep for the show, it just wasn't as good. It wasn't George Bell. So it was like, you know, I'd go, can you just, you know, go a little faster? Can you just give me this or that or that? And people just don't understand. Being a dialogue coach, that was a tough job, but he was perfect for it. And he could play anything. He did play anything. He played all those characters.
It's an intense job. Very I had intense. No idea. Yeah. I mean, all the notes he had to take and knowing this was take 3, this was take 5. They got it on take 6. Mm-hmm. They didn't get it. I was like, this is like mathematical.
And the thing is you never saw the guy working. It didn't seem like work for him. You never saw him in a bad mood. He was always jovial and happy and conversational, and it's like he wasn't even working. It was wild. He was always in a great mood and just so efficient with what he did, and it was just all very effortless. I mean, he was really important to that show. He was really, really key to that show. And I hope somehow he gets some kind of honorarium from the studio, maybe, or from the creators. Maybe an honorarium is in store. Because, man, he contributed mightily to that whole production.
I think we have some questions for you, Scott.
For me?
Yeah. Danielle, you want to bring him in?
Oh, my goodness. Here she is. Joanna, hello. How are you? Welcome to the podcast.
You. Hi. Nice to meet you.
Nice
Very
to meet
surreal,
you.
But nice to meet you guys.
And where are you calling in from?
New York City.
Oh, you're in New York City.
Yep.
So you sent... a pretty detailed email to the show pointing out the fact that I was incredibly wrong about some specificities, some details of the show, if I'm not mistaken. And I did read it.
Sorry.
No. I mean, this is what we love. Like we said at the beginning of the podcast, we want feedback, you know, whether it's a super positive and super supportive or, you know, you're correcting us. Hey. Love it. That's why you're on the show. Your honesty, and we appreciate it. So, go ahead and let's discuss it. What did you see, and what did you feel the burning desire to point out to us?
Yeah, sorry. So when you guys were talking last week about how Luke has been in love with Lorelai for 16 years, and that's not true. They actually only met about 4 or 5 years before that episode happened. Because, and you'll see it.
Tell us how you know, because I am totally befuddled.
Okay, so in the episode that's coming up and a little bit further down, still this season, The Concert Interruptus. Actually, it's the one that a previous guest was talking about, where they go to a concert in the city. Anyway, in that episode, Rachel comes up for the first time.
Ooh.
And when Rachel comes up, Lorelai is like, you know, just totally dumbfounded. Who's this? Luke had a girlfriend? What? When? And so there's this conversation that happens with Miss Patty and with Suki. And it comes out that, you know, they said that he had this girlfriend, Rachel, 5 or 6 years before. And Suki says, and Lorelai responds, how did I miss this? Like, you know, where was I? And Suki says, well, Rory was 11. You were just moving into this house. So that's one of the times that we get timing. And then we also, later on in the series, get confirmation from something that Luke says that also matches up timing-wise. But so it's only been like 4 to 5 years.
Have you ever, Joanne, let me ask you a question. Have you ever been so deeply in love with somebody over a period of time that
I'm not saying 5 years isn't a long time.
1 year, 1 year of being in an unrequited love situation seems like 4 years. So if it's 4 or 5 years that I was in love with her, according to you, and I know Luke's heart was so deeply,
as he could.
What is the word, so deeply affected by Lorelai that it seemed like 16 years?
I'm not saying that 5 years, 4 years isn't a long time. I'm just saying that it wasn't,
can I ask a timeline question though? So if she was just moving into the house, but she lived with that woman that owned the inn, right? Did they know each other? They just weren't so tight that she would have been aware of the girlfriend, or did they not know each other yet?
No, and this comes up in this conversation. I don't want to give stuff away.
No, it's okay. It's okay. We need the timeline, so it's okay.
But so when Luke and Lorelai finally go on a date, and Luke says very specifically, it's like 8 years he's been in love with her.
Okay.
At that point, and that happens at the, well, I don't want to say what happens, but that happens.
I
ruined some stuff for some of the people.
No, you're amazing. You're doing great. So we had the timeline a little screwy, Scott.
Yeah, and what we were talking about on Instagram was that part of actually how it, because everybody was saying, how does that even make sense? Like, how did she not go to Luke's? Well, when they were living in the Independence Inn, which as Rory was growing up, you know, from the age of, I don't know, whatever, however many months or one until she was 11 and they moved into the house, clearly Lorelai had no money. She must've been just saving up. They didn't go to Luke's. They certainly were eating for free at the Independence Inn. So that's how it all makes sense.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Because the Independence Inn is, you know, close still by. It's just
kind of known each other in passing. Maybe they knew each other just like from around town. Is there any chance? No. Oh,
no chance.
No, I think Luke knows very specifically when he first saw her.
Oh, so he loved her from, about it. We'll get into it, I'm sure, later. But Scott, you did love her at first sight.
Absolutely. So deeply that the first week seemed like a month and the first year seemed like 4 years. That's how deeply. It's like beyond thunderstruck. Beyond. You know what I mean? So beyond that you can't even act on it. It's so, because the
risk. Well, this is why we need help, because, we aren't.
Well, we appreciate your thoughts. Thank you for coming on and pointing it out.
Anytime.
Keep it coming, because we're going to blow something else soon enough.
Already happened here and there, but that's okay.
And it's wonderful to meet you. And again, thank you so very, very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, Joanna, take care. Well, that was Joanna. Thank you, Joanna, for coming on. Love that. You know, brace us, man. Get us, you know, crack the whip on us, man. We love that kind of stuff. Thank you so much, Joanna. And like I said, I'm sticking with the Thunderstruck. Every year was like 4 years for Luke, and that's why I said 16 years, because that's what it was like for me as an actor. So we're going to turn this into a two-parter, because we're gonna have to recap the episode as a team. And then just, you know, we'll drop a separate episode in the same week.
Soon,
because
yeah,
there's just so
soon.
Much to unpack here, and we need to really go into this.
Just everybody stay tuned, because we're going to do a full recap on Kiss and Tell, like, right away.
Absolutely. So there you go. So everybody stay tuned. We're going to do a full recap of Kiss and Tell. It's on the way. It's going to be a separate episode. This is going to be part two of Kiss and Tell. Anyway, thanks everybody for tuning in and downloading. We appreciate it. Best fans on the planet. I am Scott Patterson. This is I Am All In Podcast, iHeartRadio. We will see you soon. Don't forget, follow us on Instagram at I Am All In Podcast and email us at gilmore@iheartradio.com. Oh, you Gilmore fans, if you're looking for the best cup of coffee in the world, go to my website for my company, scottyp.com, scottyp.com, scottyp.com. Grade 1 specialty coffee.